From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Ryan Cunningham, filling in for Roger McDonough, who is on vacation this week. Today on the show, we'll begin by bringing you up to date on your top local headlines. And also throughout the summer on the show, we're re-airing some of our favorite interviews from the past year. Today, it's a conversation with Lisa Stoddard, Suicide Prevention Coordinator for the Salt Lake City VA. We're talking to her about mental health challenges that veterans confront when they return home.
It's something that whether somebody is diagnosed fully as PTSD or they have subclinical symptoms or acute stress, it's something that we all need to be watching out for with all of our returning service members, because somebody can appear on the surface to be doing okay, but still be struggling.
That and more coming up on The Rundown here on KCPW. I'm Ryan Cunningham, filling in for Roger McDonough. You're listening to The Rundown. These are your top local headlines. Animal welfare activists will be in court Thursday arguing against the Utah law that criminalizes undercover investigations of livestock operations. The lawsuit was the first in the country to challenge so-called ag gag laws that activists say are designed to silence them. State attorneys argued that the judge should throw out the Utah case because the activists don't face an immediate threat of prosecution. Supporters say the measures protect workplace safety in an industry targeted by activists. Critics argue the laws squelch investigations like a 2007 Humane Society probe in California that led to the largest meat recall in U.S. history. A federal appeals court has ruled a former West Valley City mayor who wrote news stories under a false identity did not defame a former contractor in one of his stories. The court in Denver upheld a lower court's decision to dismiss the defamation lawsuit against former Mayor Mike Winder. Winder wrote more than a dozen newspaper stories for Utah media in 2011 using the name Richard Burwash. The president of the Outdoor Industry Association says he's optimistic the world's largest outdoor gear trade show can remain in Salt Lake City for the long term, now that the state is pushing for a new convention center hotel. Frank Hugelmeyer told the AP yesterday that he was very pleased with the Utah legislature during its last session when it approved a $75 million tax incentive for the builder of an 800 to 1,000-room hotel near the convention center. And finally today, usually when a legal team wins a case in an appellate court, they're not begging the Supreme Court to give it another look. But Kitchen v. Herbert has always been a different case. On Thursday, the landmark same-sex marriage case took another turn towards the Supreme Court. Just a few days ago, Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes and the state of Utah petitioned the Supreme Court to hear the case. Now, the plaintiffs in favor of same-sex marriage have announced that they, too, would like their case to be heard at the nation's highest court. One might question the wisdom of this move, so I called Kate Kendall of the National Council for Lesbian Rights to help explain the plaintiff's rationale. Her group is helping to represent the six plaintiffs in the case.
We know that the only way this issue is going to be finally resolved is when the U.S. Supreme Court issues a final opinion on marriage equality nationwide. Even if we were to see a partial victory in the Tenth Circuit, for example, the stay could still stay in place for some time. There could still be more jockeying. Our clients certainly want a victory for themselves. But beyond that, they want a victory for every same-sex couple and family that has labored under the stigma, the degradation, the indignity of not having their relationship recognized and respected by the government.
From your perspective, is it conceivable that the Supreme Court won't hear this case? And what do you do if that happens? How devastating would that be?
Well, there are a number of cases the court could take. And what we ultimately want is resolution on the issue of marriage nationwide. We think, and this is the one issue where we agree with the attorneys representing the state of Utah, we think the Utah case is a very attractive vehicle for doing that, and we think it's a perfect case to be used to decide that question.
Right. So you do feel that the Supreme Court will take some case, if not this case?
It is conceivable, to use your word, Ryan, that they might not take any case, that if they're the Supreme Court, they can do whatever they want. I think that is unlikely. I think the avalanche of cases and the pressure for people to get a resolution on this issue and the widespread public support to end this discrimination is present and has all coalesced to make it exactly the right time for the court to take a case and resolve this issue once and for all.
just looking back at the DOMA case and the Prop 8 case, the court split is fairly predictable given what last year's rulings told us. Does that predictability, does that play into your confidence here, asking for this hearing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, I would certainly not predict victory. I am hopeful that the case is very compelling. Circumstances are compelling. National attitudes and public support, the court's pronouncements, the majority rulings in Windsor particularly, and that same majority that ruled in other cases involving LGBT rights, you know, this is a court where we feel like we can convince a majority that it offends every principle that we say we stand for as a nation to take a category of people and completely fence them off from protections and security that everyone else enjoys. I think the time is right, and I am very hopeful that we would be able to certainly command the 5 votes we need and perhaps even more than that. You want to be on the right side of history on a question that is maybe the civil rights issue of maybe a generation, and I'm hoping we would see that on this court.
Just one more question. Chief Justice John Roberts, during the hearings for Proposition 8 in DOMA, kind of suggested that maybe the country wasn't ready for same-sex marriage. Same-sex marriage is a fairly new institution. Do you feel like Americans are ready for same-sex marriage? And do you think that Chief Justice John Roberts would see it that way?
I think we have seen just a breathtaking sea change in public support and embrace for the idea of marriage equality for all couples. And I think we've even seen that, you know, in my home state there of Utah. The number of people that you might not expect who feel like, if we live in a constitutional democracy that promises equality and justice to all, to not provide marriage equality to all committed couples offends those principles, and we need to walk the talk if we say we stand for justice. I actually think the nation is ready, and I'm hoping that in his role as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts would be on the right side of history and would join the other justices in ending this discrimination once and for all.
That was Kate Kendall, Executive Director of the National Council for Lesbian Rights, explaining why she and the 6 Utah plaintiffs would like to see their case, or any case on same-sex marriage bans, be heard at the Supreme Court. When we come back, we'll have Roger's interview with the Suicide Prevention Coordinator at the Salt Lake VA. Welcome back. This summer on The Rundown, we're revisiting some of our best conversations from the past year. Last September, KCPW's Roger McDonough sat down with Lisa Stoddard. She's the Suicide Prevention Coordinator for the Salt Lake City VA Medical Center, and she talked to Roger about the effect post-traumatic stress disorder is having on returning veterans, as well as about the treatment programs available to them. Again, this conversation first aired last year in September.
So, the U.S. military completed its withdrawal from Iraq in December 2011, and President Obama has vowed to withdraw nearly all of the remaining 60,000 or so troops in Afghanistan by the end of 2014. But for many veterans, another battle is just starting in the form of their own struggle with mental health repercussions stemming from their experiences. Post-traumatic stress disorder doesn't just affect members of the armed forces, but obviously afflicts them in far greater numbers because of their experience in war. Lisa, most people have heard of the initials, but I'm wondering if you can help illuminate this. What is PTSD, and how well do we understand it?
So PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, is an anxiety disorder. It happens after being exposed to a traumatic event. Our military folks, if you start thinking about what they went through while they were deployed, we're talking about stressors that not only occur on a traumatic level if they're engaged in direct combat, but also day-to-day stressors that are increased and prolonged over a long period of the deployments. So we're talking about the stress of leaving your family behind, worrying about wives, loved ones, money, marital discord, the stress of the environment being there. Are you safe, even though you may not be directly engaged in firefights? You're still in an area that is not secure.
So 2 million Americans have fought in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I'm wondering if there's any estimate of how many are struggling with PTSD in the United States.
You know, there's been a lot of numbers that have come out. You know, rather than quote a specific number, I just want to express that it is it's huge. Mm-hmm. It's something that whether somebody is diagnosed fully as PTSD or they have subclinical symptoms or acute stress, you know, it's something that we all need to be watching out for with all of our returning service members, because somebody can appear on the surface to be doing okay but still be struggling.
I'll say what I've read, which is that of those 2 million, up to 20 or 30%, which is about 400,000 to 600,000 vets, it is a huge number, as you said. Maybe we can talk about what the symptoms are. What are the symptoms of PTSD?
So there's a lot of symptoms. When you start talking about PTSD, the first thing you've got to consider is the individual has to have been through a traumatic experience. And this isn't just everyday type stuff. This is a life or death experience, or they witnessed somebody else dying or felt that their lives or the lives of others were at risk. So you have the trauma. From there, you have different categories of symptoms. Things that I guess we could talk about that are common are avoidance. A lot of times you'll find that our service members will come home and they'll do okay initially, but with time, they start to avoid going out in public, not feeling comfortable, not wanting to be with family, friends, feeling detached, isolating themselves. Anything to avoid something that would trigger those memories associated to the traumatic event. So this may be television shows, movies. It may be certain people. So avoidance is a huge factor. And then if you think about it, the avoidance is about re-experiencing the memories associated to the trauma. So you have this intrusive memories that an individual has a hard time controlling. They don't want to think about it and replay it in their mind over and over, but that's what keeps happening. And those memories can be so vivid and so strong that they're what we call flashbacks. It can cause severe nightmares, issues with sleep. When you start getting into those types of problems, I know for myself, I don't function with no sleep. So if you have all of this other stuff going on and now you're not sleeping at all, things can get really bad really fast.
Compounding the issue. That seems like a very common one that we hear about in the media is, hear about in reports is the flashback. The idea that a returned vet would be walking around and something would trigger a reminder of that traumatic experience and they would begin to kind of relive it.
Now, you know, when you start thinking about flashbacks, there's a lot of, you know, a lot that goes on in the media and a lot that goes on in movies that create this image of a person that's, you know, disoriented or dangerous. And that's not typically the case. What I'm referring to is more so, you know, say somebody's out and about and they're driving down I-15 and past the refineries and see the smoke in the air. And, you know, they start really, really thinking about sights or visions or smells. Smells tend to trigger people associated to their deployments. And this could be for a minute, you know, looking out and seeing the landscape change or feeling inside that you're in that place, even though you're not, even though the mind's where it needs to be. It could be a sense of feeling that you're there.
So what are the treatment options that are available to returning vets, both at the VA and elsewhere, if you can address that?
So treatment options are varied, and it's going to depend on the individual and what exactly is happening for them. You know, through the VA here in Salt Lake City, anybody can walk in and go to our open PTSD assessment groups. So if somebody suspects that this may be an issue for them, they can go and they can learn about PTSD and then on that same day receive a formal assessment from our PTSD team, figure out what's going on for the individual, and then be able to pinpoint where they need to start and what are the treatment options. So treatment can be medications. You know, there's medications that can help greatly with sleep, with helping with nightmares, with calming anxiety. But the other side of it is therapy. So we offer a lot of evidence-based therapies through the VA that are shown to help an individual cope in different ways, cope in constructive ways, so that over time they get better rather than having symptoms worsen. So somebody can I think with time and work, they can get better, and they do get better. We've seen it happen. So I think that's one of the most important things to realize, is that as much as individuals don't want to address the issue because they want to avoid those thoughts and those memories,
that help is out there.
And help is out there, and they will get better.
That's good to have that knowledge that you can improve, that you can recover.
Mm-hmm. And these treatments are available through the VA, but they can also be sought out in the community if somebody would prefer to do that.
Well, I wanted to ask a little bit about the effect of this on not just the vets themselves, but on their families, their spouses, their children. I think we look at just the one individual and say this person needs treatment, but there is oftentimes, you know, another partner involved, et cetera. How does treatment address the sort of family dynamic?
You know, when you start thinking about things on a family level, it's interesting, because you're right. If an individual's not doing well, it's going to impact the family. And if the family's not doing well, we're going to have a hard time getting the individual to do better. So it is good for treatment to address what's going on in the home environment, and to really not only help the veteran, but figure out how to improve the family structure. So we're looking at the support system. How can we build communication between the husband and wife? How can we help the children? So there's a lot of programs and resources available, whether it's through the VA, the Vet Center. There's resources through Military One Source. The different units and branches have a lot of programs going on. So whether, there's stuff out there, whether it's for children readjusting to their, either a father or mother deploying or coming home. There's marriage counseling and therapy. There's always, if the veteran is open to having their spouse involved in their therapy and treatment, that's always a good thing.
You know, Lisa, you're the suicide prevention coordinator at the VA, and I'm wondering if veterans on the whole are more prone to suicide than the general public.
Well, suicide rates within the veteran population have been something that's been on, national attention for, since the war started. Now, it's a complicated issue. So rates within the general population within our country have increased since 2000, and they're continuing to increase. There's a lot going on for veterans. When you pull that specific group out, you're looking at the higher at-risk population within the general population is the majority of the veteran population. So mm-hmm. You're looking at a population that's mostly men. Men complete suicide more often than women.
On the whole, just generally.
And generally, women will attempt more often than men, four times more often. Mm. You're also looking at different dynamics, what's going on within the different age groups. There's been a lot of work to not only identify suicide rates and what's going on within the veteran population that's receiving care through the VA, but also to expand and collect data from all the different states, through their mortality records, to try to put it together so that we can figure out the bigger population, whether a veteran's receiving care through the VA or not, what are the suicide rates, what are the dynamics that are happening, and what can be done to help. So there are increased rates within the veteran population. In the general population, suicide rates are increasing, but we're seeing that the suicide rates within the veteran population have been steadying out, despite the fact that we have an increase within the general population, which is suggesting that people getting in and getting treatment and the efforts that are being made are helping.
So that kind of on the whole, veterans are generally more likely to attempt suicide, but that is stabling out in comparison to the general population, where suicide rates are increasing.
Yeah. So completed suicides are increasing in the general population. However, within the veteran population, we're seeing that it's been stable. They've been slowing down. We've also seen that within the younger veterans, that the attempts are decreasing.
And that's suggestive of the idea that they are getting treatment. Mm-hmm. So how about PTSD? People who suffer from PTSD, are they more likely to have suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideation?
Well, anybody with a mental health disorder is at increased risk for developing suicidal thoughts and on having issues with suicide attempts or completions. So most commonly associated to suicide is depression. Now, when you start thinking about all the different mental health disorders, they all are going to increase risk. Now, PTSD, somebody can have a primary diagnosis of PTSD and have secondary depression because of what's going on in their lives. A lot of this stuff will cross over. So yes, we're looking at a population that's at increased risk purely because of the fact that they have a mental health diagnosis. Risk is then going to increase based on, you know, our known risk factors. You know, is this, you know, we're looking for, you know, things like a divorce.
Financial difficulties,
which is going on within, you know, every population. We're struggling. Our service members are coming home, and are they able to find a job or pick up the job that they had when they left? Can they care for their families? There's a lot of stress that people are feeling, and that leads to exacerbated symptoms and can lead to suicidal thoughts eventually.
There's kind of an aura of toughness about the military, and I imagine that in many circumstances the soldier has to steel him or herself against the kind of in-the-moment circumstances. But I'm wondering if that concept of toughness means that vets might be reticent to acknowledge that they actually have a problem.
It is a factor. So you're describing the military culture. In general, that culture, when you start thinking about it, they are very tough. They can do things on their own. They don't want to need assistance. They don't want to have a problem or to need help. To need help is to be weak. That is a barrier to getting help, obviously. I think it even complicates it more when somebody's suffering from PTSD and they don't know what is going on. So somebody's come home and they're adjusting and they're, you know, getting used to being back with the family, and they start noticing that they're not doing so well. The initial reaction, without understanding what's happening, is to, you know, is to just try to avoid it, try to make it day to day, hope it gets better, pretend it's not there.
Yeah.
And it tends to get worse with time.
I mean, that toughness might make you think that you can actually deal with the, I mean, as a soldier, I'm sure you're taught to solve problems on your own, you know, I mean,
Well, when you think about it, too, it's like, you know, the culture is very much about being tough men, and they can handle all these physical activities and duties, and they've been through all of this, these stresses at war. Okay, now why is it that nightmares are bugging me and I can't deal with it? Why is it that I can't control my temper? The emotional side, when you start thinking about it, is perceived to be, you know, something that shouldn't be an issue.
So let's say there's somebody out there listening right now who maybe thinks that it's time to look for treatment, or that someone they know does. What do they do?
You know, depending on the circumstances, if it's a crisis, if somebody's not doing well and they need to get in or they need somebody right now, the National Veterans Crisis Line is a great resource. They're there and available 24/7. They can get emergency resources to somebody, or they can be there just to talk.
Can we get the number for that?
Yeah, that number is 1-800-273-8255.
Which is TALK, D-A-L-K.
It is.
Great, so 1-800-273-8255. And then how about locally, if they're looking for something in the Salt Lake area that maybe it's not as urgent, but they want to seek the help that they think they might need?
So one more thing about the crisis line, it does go to a local level as well. So whenever somebody reaches out to the crisis line, it creates a referral that comes back locally to my team here in Salt Lake, and we're able to get them hooked up here with all the services they need. Now, without going through the crisis line, somebody can seek services at the Salt Lake City VA. They can go up to the VA and get enrolled. They can have a walk-in appointment with mental health if they have not been there before. You know, definitely they can call and get a typical appointment, but I would definitely encourage somebody to walk in and either see our OEF-OIF team. They're located near enrollment, and an individual can just ask for that, and they're there, and they can take walk-in appointments. They can also attend a PTSD assessment. Those happen weekly, and those appointments are set up for walk-in availability, and they would get a whole diagnostic workup, which is really nice. So they would be able to come in, learn about PTSD, learn about what's going on, find out if it actually is something that is an issue for them, and then know what to do from there.
I should say that OEF is Operation Enduring Freedom, and OIF is Operation Iraqi Freedom.
Correct.
Just for those who don't know, who are listening. Lisa Stoddard, we've run out of time, but I want to thank you for coming in and having this informative and important discussion.
You're welcome.
Again, that was Roger McDonough in conversation with Salt Lake City Veterans Administration Suicide Prevention Coordinator Lisa Stoddard. They spoke last September. This interview and all of the interviews we feature on the program can be found at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Ryan Cunningham. This is The Rundown. We'll be right back. Thanks again for joining us today on The Rundown. This show is produced by Lauren Colucci with additional assistance provided by Jesse Ellis, Roger McDonough, and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the show, we have Roger's interview with climate scientist Michael Mann. They'll talk about measuring global temperatures throughout history. I'm Ryan Cunningham. Thanks again for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are just moments away here on KCPW.